So by the time that the war broke out in 431, Pericles could openly say what everyone knew, that is, that the Athenians possessed an archē, an empire, which embraced the entire Aegean. On the other side, the Spartan sphere of influence was very differently organized. Sparta, as we've seen, was an isolationist country, a tribe or a people of the Greeks who tended to avoid involvement in affairs, particularly if those affairs took them away from their homeland of Laconia and the town of Sparta. Not only were they generally isolationist in their tendencies, but also the alliances that they had, particularly with the other states of the Peloponnese, were very loosely organized in the sense that these alliances did not involve a league in which all of the allies were subject to the will of Sparta. These Peloponnesian states, members of the Peloponnesian League, for example, did not pay tribute to Sparta. Rather, they made contributions to a general war chest which was used by the entire Peloponnesian League, a collective war fund, if you will. Another very important difference, and this was absolutely critical, I think, both in the development towards war and then in the conduct of the war, was that the Peloponnesian League, with Sparta at its centre, was primarily a land alliance. It was not directed towards the sea, and for that reason, naval supremacy was not a burning issue within that league. Sparta's allies included, for example, states that were almost as powerful as Sparta itself, sometimes even wealthier. Corinth, for example, was a much richer state than Sparta. And in terms of military power, in terms of the sheer number of men who could be put into the field, Thebes also was almost as strong as Sparta. And then in the Peloponnese, Sparta also had a neighbour which was not allied to it, but in fact was almost its permanent enemy, the state of Argos. So the two systems are very different. During the 5th century, we find Athens becoming the hegemon, the leader of an archē, an empire, though it is democratic. On the other hand, we find Sparta, a quite undemocratic state, but nevertheless the centre of a league which involves a number of other powerful states that counterbalance the power of Sparta. Now, as we've seen already, a period of conflict erupted in the middle of the 5th century between 460 and 446 BC, the period known as the First Peloponnesian War. And we've noted that that outbreak and that conflict coincides also with a shift in Athenian policy, since it was around this time that Cimon had been expelled by the people of Athens, and in his absence, a new leader, namely Pericles, had come to the fore and had reoriented Athenian policy away from conflict with Persia and more towards conflict with Sparta. But in 451, Cimon returned to Athens, his period of exile was over, and almost immediately we find the Athenians signing a 5-year armistice with the Spartans. So again, we see these shifts in Athenian and Spartan policy in relation to each other being dictated by some of the major figures in Athenian politics. But immediately after this shift, this peace in 451 between Athens and Sparta, Cimon, who had once again raised the banner against Persia, took an Athenian fleet to Cyprus, where he was killed. And with his death, we see the end of this vigorous anti-Persian policy, and once again the pendulum in Athens swings back towards those who regard Sparta as the true enemy. And so despite the fact that an armistice had been signed, in fact, war broke out, further conflict continued from about 450 down to about 446. So gradually during the 5th century, the two camps are coming further and further apart. Originally allies, but now seeing each other as two antithetical systems. The war itself would break out in 431 BC, and we're going to have to ask why specifically it broke out, even though we've seen this general sundering, if you will, of the alliance between these two states. I think the first thing we have to keep in mind is the role that warfare plays in the life of the Greeks. You may have noticed that during the course of these lectures, at various times, we have come up against different concepts such as eris, strife, In the Hesiodic poems, as early as the 8th century, Hesiod tells us that there are two kinds of strife all over the broad earth, and he defines these as the good form of strife, which is the ambition that makes you emulate your neighbour and try to do as well and have as productive a farm as your neighbour. And the bad kind of strife on the other side is the spirit of competition that leads you, through jealousy, to go in at night and cut down your neighbour's vines.